Ready? Ready? Okay. Today we're doing the Know the Yehuda. Let's just get this out of the way. Yehuda was his father, who was very devoted to him, so therefore he called the Sefer Tshuvos the Know the Yehuda, because he was known because of Yehuda. Similarly, he wrote the Tzlach, which is called the Tzion LeNefesh Chaya, Chaya being his mother. Okay, now we got that out of the way, we could start. Noda is known. Okay? His real name is Rabbi Yechezkel ben Yehuda Landau. He's born in Apito, Poland. He's born into a good family. First of all, he's an only child, which is unique for Gedolim, because usually they come from big families. I don't know why that is, but he was an only child. His parents doted on him. He was a gifted child. And he grew up to be, as I will try to explain, the first real communal rabbi that we've ever had. Like, he was a person who was close to his congregants, whose tshuva was based on real questions, not made-up questions from people who lived in the community. You know, he was really the forerunner of the chassas, who we did last week, who became like, it's not like he was the first gadol, but in a way he kind of was. You know, we didn't use words like that then, but he played that role. Okay, let's start. He was gifted as a child. He learned with Rav Yitzchak Azik of Ludmir, who was the Gadol Ador, till he was 12. Okay, one story, because it's a great story. There were two brothers who were business partners and then fought and had a terrible fight, and one of the brothers took a neder that he would never, ever see his brother again. Okay? And it was painful. It went on for a time. Anyway, his brother died. And you know, he was completely broken by the fact that he had taken this neder and he wanted to go to the funeral. And so in the community, there were a lot of people discussing this. Could there be matir neder? How would it work exactly? And the little Yechezkel said to Rav Yitzchak Azik, he said to him, it's a pasuk. It's as simple as it goes. So he said, what is it? So he said, the pasuk says, Ki kasheri temet mitzrayim ayom lo tosifun lirot od ad olam. The way you saw Egypt today, you won't see them ever again. But then the pasuk says, Vayar Yisrael et mitzrayim meit al sfat hayam. And so the little kid said, so you see that once you die, it's not considered like seeing the same person. You're a different person. And so the guy could go to the funeral. So, you know, he kissed him on the forehead, he passed him that way. It's just a good story. Okay, he moves to a town called Brody, where it becomes time to get married, so he marries a girl named Liba when he's 18 years old. She is his wife for 60 years. Okay, like it, you know, it's a successful marriage. At the end, when she died slightly before him, you know, he was like completely shattered. He couldn't give a hesped, he couldn't do anything. He was completely shattered from losing, you know, his wife who had built his life with him. Okay? They made him the Av Bezdin at 21 of Brody. Now, Brody's not the biggest town ever, but when you become the Av Bezdin, where he stayed for 10 years, it's sort of like good practice to write tshuvos. Like, every question in Brody came to the Know the Yehuda, and he answered them, and so he spent 10 years in Brody. Something then happened that I don't fully understand. He offended, and apparently he did this at other times also, he offended some rich, powerful Jew. This story, you know, when you read it in art school, you read it in, like, our sources, you know, the guy was offensive, he had no kavod haTorah, whatever, and the Know the Yehuda put him in his place, and then he got kicked out of Brody. Like, this guy went to the authorities, and however it works exactly, the Know the Yehuda had to leave. Okay. He becomes Rav, or chief rabbi of a small town called Yampol. It's J-A-M-P-O-L. It's like a nothing town. Okay, that's where he becomes a chief rabbi, and at the age of 20. And then 10 years later, he is invited to become the chief rabbi of Prague. Now again, Yampol is like Podunk, Iowa, and Prague is like Yerushalayim, right? To be the chief rabbi of Prague is to be the chief, yes?
What age did he become chief rabbi of Brody and then of Yampol?
So he was never chief rabbi of Brody. He was the Av Bezdin of Brody. At 30, he becomes the Rav of Yampol, And at 40, he becomes the Rav of Prague. Now, how does a guy from Yampol become the Rav Rashi of Prague? So this is interesting. The fight, we'll start like this. As we've mentioned before, the 1600s were a dark period of Judaism because of Shabtai Tzvi. Now, even after he converts to Islam, he has followers. Like, why you would follow somebody who converted to Islam, I don't know. But the Sabbatheans continued, you know, well after his death. And one of the most famous possible Sabbatheans was the Gadol Hador called Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, right? On the other side, there was Rav Yaakov Emden, who, like his father, Chacham Tzvi, was like a hunter of Sabbatheans. Like, he could figure out that despite your reputation, you were a Sabbathean. Now, in 1725, a whole bunch of rabbis get together and basically put into Cheirem anybody who's a Shabtai Tzvinik, who's a Sabbathean. One of the rabbis who signs the Cheirem is Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, which should, you know, clear him of all charges against him, because if he's against Sabbatheanism publicly, he's obviously a good man. But the Rav Yaakov Emden felt otherwise. And this is like a huge, huge fight in Europe, where German rabbis support Rav Yaakov Emden, and Polish rabbis support Rav Yonasan Eibshitz. Okay? Everybody gets involved in this. It tears apart communities. Everybody gets involved in this fight except for the Noda Yehuda, who's living in some little town called Yampol and has nothing to do with the fight. So he sits it out. But because he wants to bring peace to the Jewish community, and because he wasn't otherwise invested in the fight, he writes a very famous letter. And the letter is like a masterpiece of diplomacy and humility, and essentially the letter gets him the job. What does the letter say? So the letter says that Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz is the Gadol Hador. Okay? He's a tzaddik, he's a yirei shamayim, he has avas Hashem, he's fantastic. Elamai, he says, you know, when you open up these kameos, I should have mentioned this, kameos are translated in English as amulets, right? Like, if you've ever seen, and even if you didn't, people wear things that have like a cloth in them, right? And on the cloth it says, I don't know, it says Shema, it says really cool things, or it says really not cool things. So the Noda Yehuda said, Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, and that was the whole fight. I mean, Rabbi Yaakov Emden said, I've opened up these kameos that he wrote, and he's a Sabbathean. I can't explain why that was. I don't understand it. But Rabbi Yaakov Emden claimed to understand it. Okay, so says the Noda Yehuda, Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz is the Gadol Hador. It's fantastic. He does everything. The problem is, it's possible to understand, to misunderstand, if you open up these kameos, you might misunderstand and think that he's a Sabbathean. So what we should do is, we should basically put into Gnizo all the kameos, you know, and life will go on. But you should know that Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz is not a Sabbathean. Almost certainly he meant to say that Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz is a Sabbathean. That's why he was getting rid of the amulets. But he said it in a very smart way, in a very thoughtful way, in a way that at least in theory protected his, you know, like he wasn't taking a side. He says, Rav Yaakov Emden is wrong, Rav Yonasan Eibshitz is not a Sabbathean, but because you could misunderstand these kameos, we should get rid of them. Okay? He signs the letter, just to give you a sense, you know, Yechezkel Segal Landau, Rabbi of the small town of Yampol, where he has established a temporary abode. I mean, he says, like, I'm nobody. Who am I to get involved in this? But, you know, I'd like to bring peace. Okay. Prague, now let's go back in history. Prague is the biggest Jewish community in Europe. It has 50,000 Jews. The community began before Rashi, okay, from the time of the Gaonim. It's like, it's a really well-established Rabbeinu, even before Rabbeinu Gershom. Okay? There was a huge Jewish ghetto in Prague, and being the Rav Rashi of Prague was like being the Rav Rashi of Yerushalayim. It was a really big deal. Now, some more history. In 1740, Charles VI dies. His daughter is Maria Theresa. She becomes Empress of Hungary. okay, Hungary and Bohemia, which includes Austria, which of course includes Prague. Okay? Now, when she takes over, Frederick the Great of Prussia attacks to win back land that he had lost in some other war. Okay? Now, the Jews suffer greatly, because Jews always suffer, and during wars in particular. And they're accused of helping Frederick the Great. And so Maria Therese is furious at the Jews. She believes the slander against them. So she kicks all the Jews out of Prague. Now, that's a real tragedy. You know, there'd been a really, really old community in Prague, and people were shattered by that. And Jews don't know what to do. But they leave, because they have no choice. But 4 years later, the Jews pay a huge bribe, and they negotiate their return to Prague. Okay, so during all this period of time, there is no Rava Rashi, because the previous one died, and they got kicked out anyway. But then they can't find the chief rabbi. There are people in Prague who are up for the job. But if you live in Prague, you're either on the Emden side or the Eibschitz side. And so it means half the people hate you, because that was the fight. Everybody has a position. And all the proposed candidates from within Prague, and there were good candidates, and they would tell me the Chachamim, but they had taken a position on this controversy. So basically, they were ruled out. That left non-Prague people. They discovered, the Noda B'Yehuda, and the Noda B'Yehuda is chosen as the chief rabbi of Prague. And essentially there he makes his reputation. But something you should know, because it's funny, but it's also like painful. It gives you a sense of how bad. There was huge opposition to the Noda B'Yehuda, mostly because people suspected that he didn't like Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz. So if you were a Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz fan, it's not just me who understands from the letter. Most people understood from the letter that he was taking a position, even though he claimed not to. Okay, so for example, when he came to Prague, there was organized opposition. So like, here's a good story, because it's true, and it's also funny. The first Shabbos he was there, he spoke at Shal Shudas. And the opponents, who were Talmidei Chachamim, were like attacking him and asking questions, and he was answering them. And at some point, a guy asked him a question from a Rambam, and he just continued, like he ignored it. And this was like a shocking thing, because apparently he didn't know the Rambam, or he couldn't respond to the Rambam. And so after Shabbos, Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz went home, and he opened up his Rambam, and he looked for it, and he said, there was no such Rambam. A guy made up a Rambam to ask him a question in the shir, to make him look bad. And it worked, and he looked bad. So he met the guy during the week, and he said to him something like, you know, apparently you have a version of the Rambam that I don't have, because the Rambam that you quoted doesn't exist. So he said, you're right, I made up a Rambam, but the Rav Rashi of Prague should know on the spot that I made up a Rambam. So it's incredibly disrespectful, and it took quite a while till he won him over. But he did win over the people of Prague, and he won over the opposition, and he became, you know, he became who he was. Now, Prague, under the Noda B'Yehuda, became a center of Talmud Torah. One of his main Talmidim was Rav Avram Danzig, by the way, otherwise known as the Chai Adam, which is nice to know. He built a yeshiva there, and it was a yeshiva that stood for Talmud Torah, like no kidding around. They had shir on Friday, they had shorter Bein Hazmanim, it was like here, like, you know, they had shorter Beit Hazman than other places. He was, you know, he wanted it to be a place that was known as a center for Talmud Torah. Okay, so he has the first few years in Prague are really, really good years. He builds a yeshiva. He wins the people over. It's all great. Then begins the Seven Years' War. In 1756, Austria then attacks Prussia to get back the land that they lost. Prussia sieges Prague. Prague is like a main city, and they basically, you know... Now, the Noda B'Yehuda refuses to leave, even though everybody says, you're the chief rabbi, you're the God Lador, we should get you out, you'll be in danger. He refuses to leave. He organizes a fire brigade. Apparently, fire brigades are really important in those towns, because A, if you live in a ghetto, your house is made of wood. It doesn't have to be, I suppose, but it was. And since there's not a lot of places to expand, all the houses are built on top of each other. So if like one house catches on fire, the whole ghetto goes up in flames. So the Noda B'Yehuda organizes a fire brigade. Next thing is he finds out that merchants are raising prices because it's a war, and there was a scarcity of commodities. And he's furious, and he basically institutes price controls. Like he's taking over the community in a way that no Rav ever did before. Okay. Austrians still claim that Jews are spies. It's a thing that doesn't go away. The No de Behuda fights this. First of all, he openly declares his loyalty to the Empress, and he writes a tefillah, the tefillah lishlom ha-medina, except it's not for the state of Israel. It's for Austria, right? He's the first person to write such a tefillah. You know, there is a thing in England, people say the tefillah for the queen, for the king now, you know, whatever. But he's the first person to do this. And it gained him the respect of the government, which helped later on, and it allowed Jews to become recognized citizens of the state, you know, despite the slander that people were telling about them. Okay, now, after the war, everybody's poor, except for a bunch of Jews who made money on the war. And not only do they make money on the war, but they flaunted their wealth. This, you know, obviously frustrates the No de Behuda, who responds with a series of takanot. Okay, you know, he basically has complete control of the situation now. What are the takanos? There's a bunch. Here's one. You can't invite more than 10 outside guests to a bar mitzvah. Okay, it has to be small. No more than 4 musicians at a wedding. That's a good idea. No china. Right, you got to eat on like cheaper dishes. Right, he limits the type of clothing that women can wear, but not because like of tznius issues, but because of the real tznius issues, like modesty. Right, you know, you can't, if you wear a fur coat and other people don't have money for food, that's bad. So those are the kinds of takanos he makes. They're basically about being ostentatious and showing off. He doesn't want to risk the anger of regular Austrians, and he thinks it's bad for the community. You could see him becoming a real communal leader. He's the first person to do anything like this. He canceled all house minyanim. Apparently, at some point, people started davening at home. Wait, you're good or bad with house minyanim?
Good that
you can't come out. Oh, okay, fine. Okay, fine. He did all these things. Here's an interesting thing. He made sure that Jews paid their taxes on time.
Ooh.
No. It was important to show the Austrians that they were citizens and that they paid their taxes like everybody else. Yes? One is in a house and one is the official shul. Huh? The Alt Noi Shul, the oldest shul that we have in the world that still exists in Prague. When I went there, I remember my wife said to me, we're going for Kabbalah Shabbos. She said, we're going to a shul that pre-existed Kabbalah Shabbos, which is true. Anyway, so yeah, he basically said everybody has a daven in shul. He thought it was bad for the community for people to make private minyanim.
Oh, but it didn't have to do with the government.
No, nothing like that. It was just, these are just takanos that he made when he took over the community. Okay. Here's an interesting story, just a freebie, okay? There was a poor man in Prague who was down on his luck, and so he traveled for a few years to some distant place to try to make money. And he made money. Not a ton, but he made money, and he had it in like a leather pouch. He was bringing it back to Prague. And he met a guy there who also lived in Prague, some rich Jewish merchant who was bringing back all this wine to sell in Prague. Okay, so he got a tramp with this guy, and it, you know, took a week or so to travel. He was very nervous that his money would be stolen or he'd lose it or whatever. So one night, he opened up one of the wine barrels and he put this pouch that had the money in the wine barrel and he closed it up. Apparently, it was waterproof or whatever, and he made a little mark on the wine barrel so that he would know which one was his, because there were a lot of wine barrels. Okay. He thought he saw the guy looking at him, but he put it out of his mind. Anyway, they get to Prague, and his money's gone. So he confronts the, you know, the person he got a tramp with, and he says, like, what? I gave you a free ride, and now you're attacking me. I didn't do it. Okay, so he goes to the No de Behuda, and he says, this guy stole my money, but I can't prove it. So No de Behuda says, okay, I'll talk to him. Send him to me. So the guy comes to the No de Behuda. And he says to him, you know, this guy says that you stole his money. He says, it's ridiculous. You know, he's a kofa betov. I did all these good things for him. So he says, well, if you didn't steal the money, who did? So he said, it was probably the driver, right? We had a carriage, and probably the driver stole it. So Rabbi Yehuda said to him, you know, I believe you, but the problem is then that all your wine is yei nesach / stam yeinam, and I'm going to have to put out a statement saying that your wine is usser. So, okay, so the guy admitted. So, you know, okay, it's a good story.
Did he actually admit or was it under
us? Huh?
Did he actually admit or did you just say he wouldn't get
a— No, he I mean, he actually did it, and he said he would return the money.
Uh-huh.
And so he returned the money, and that's the story. Okay, Joseph II succeeds his mother, Maria Theresa, and he drafts Jews. This is a big thing in Europe. The Rabbi Yehuda makes his peace with this and basically says, guys, they should go to the army. And he supports them and he gives them gifts. But he basically, he's a patriot. And he thinks it's really, really important for Jews to be patriots. And if everybody's serving in the army, Jews have to serve in the army also. It's important for him because it's part of what he believes in terms of politics. Okay? And again, more or less, he did bring Jews and Gentiles together. He was certainly not one of these people who was afraid of Gentiles. He thought that Jews and Gentiles could live together, they could be in the army together, and they could have relations, and they were. Okay. He was born 13 years after the Baal Shem Tov. He was a huge opponent of Hasidus, but interestingly, Hasidim gave him a pass, because he was the Gadol Hador, and he was a big Talmid Chacham, and so like Hasidim didn't hate him, even though he was mean to them. But at core, he didn't believe in this abstraction thing. He thought you are what you did, and you are who you did. If you did mitzvahs, you're a good person, and not because, you know, you have some like strange ideas of God or you love God or whatever. It has to be, you know, doing good deeds makes you a firm person, not doing good deeds makes you not a firm person. Okay, an example of how much the Rabbi Yehuda hated Hasidim. Hated is a wrong word, but disrespected. Here we go. It's Simon Sadi Gimel in the Rabbi Yehuda, in Madura Kama. The question asked to the Rabbi Yehuda was about these additions to davening. Like before, what do we say before Baruch Shamar? Okay, so he said, I'll pick with Mill. Hinei b'ze ani meshiv. Ad she'ata sho'alani nusuch amirato, yotera u'lishol im nomar ki tov ba'amirato. Right, don't ask me what's the proper nusach that you should be saying of these zihirats. You should ask me, is it a good idea to say it? And he says, Uledati ze ra'a chole bidoreinu. Val adarot shelifnei zmanenu shelo yadu minusach ze v'lo amaruhu. No one ever said these things before. Okay? And kol yemeim b'torov b'tzor ha'kol al pi ha'torov v'al pi ha'poskim asher divrehem novim im b'kor ma'im chayim Yama Talmud Alehem Nomar Tumat Yishayim Tanchem Veheim Asher Asu Pri Lamala Vigadol Meal Shemaim Chazdam Aval Bidoreinu Hazeh Ki Ozvu Et Torat Hashem Umekor Mayim Chayim Shnei Talmudim Bavli Virushalmi. He says, like, what's going on? It doesn't say anything about this in the Bavli. It doesn't say anything about this in Yerushalmi. There's no reason to say anything like this. We've lost the source of halacha. Lachtsov lahem borot nishbarim, umit nasim beruv berum levavam kalachar omar ani haroeh li niftechu sharei shamayim. I'm a saint. I'm a holy man. I see things that you can't see. He says, what's going on with this? Uba'avuri haolam mitkayem. I'm the tzaddik who's upholding the whole world. Right? It's mean. Hey, machrivei hador. They're ruining the door. Now, the famous part. Val hador hayatom hazeh ani omer, yisharim darche Hashem, v'tzadikim yelchu bohem, v'chasidim yikashlu bohem. There is no such pasuk, right? The pasuk is u'poshim yikashlu bohem. He changed poshim to chataim. The story is, to Hasidim, the story is that the editor said to him, you got a pasuk wrong, we should change it. And he said, no, I didn't. You know, like he knew he made up a pasuk. Okay, so part of it you see that he's no big fan of Hasidus. More, but again, because he's a communal Rav, Rav Lichtenstein used to speak about the Noda Behuda, and he would say, like Charedim, they take somebody who's been sheltered his whole life, and then say, you're now the Gadol Hador, make decisions for the community. He says you have to be the Noda Behuda, you have to grow up in a community, you have to go to shul with these people, you have to care about them, you have to answer all these tshuvos, then you become a person, you become a communal leader. Okay? He was revolutionary in his tshuvos, he was also a mekel sometimes. The Noda Behuda was the first person after Rabbeinu Tam, well, people forget about that, to be matir shaving on Chol HaMoed. It was an enormous controversy, and he took it on the chin from almost everybody else. But he, huh? But you don't have to repeat it. I get it. I get it. That was really funny. Okay. So he was matir shaving. When you hear people say it's all these modern people are matir shaving, you tell them no, it was the Noda Behuda who did it. There were limited circumstances, but he was matir it. Here's one. He has a tshuva about hunting, in which he basically is matir hunting, but then says, like, but why would a Jew want to hunt? Okay, but he has tshuvas about these things. He has the first tshuva on autopsies. Okay? Again, he was very, very involved in the community, very, very involved in their questions.
What was his psak?
I don't know. I just realized.
Judaism.
I said he had a tshuva about autopsies. I didn't say he was matir autopsies. Yes, but I don't remember. You know what? We'll have to look this afternoon about autopsies in the Noda Behuda. What? He was like Rav Aryeh Leibowitz. He was like the Rav Aryeh Leibowitz of his time, I think. Okay, the bottom line is, again, he was self-made, but he made himself into the Gadol Hador in Prague. He was part of the world of people who asked questions, and he set the stage for the later growth of people like the Chasam Sofer, people who claimed to be Gdolim, and people who maybe were Gdolim. Okay? Yashkach, this afternoon after Mincha, we'll do Halacha. I'll look it up. I don't have a source for autopsies, but I'll look it up.
I hear the thing about autopsies, it's not so